Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season 2 of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season 2 is out now from Lemonada Media.
This is the John Fugelsang Podcast.
This is SiriusXM Progress, Channel 127. I'm John Fugelsang, coming at you live from Los Angeles, California. The great Thea Harper is producing our show out of Brooklyn. The great and powerful Chris Hauselt is executive producing our show out of South Carolina. We are so grateful to Dino Badala for being such an excellent live lead-in every night. And we are so grateful to all y'all for being here with us for Tell Me Everything. For the next 3 hours, we're going to come at you with music and empathy and fun and history and something approaching entertainment. And we'd love to hear from you. Our most important guest is always you guys. 866-997-4748. Hello to our evil army of the night. Everybody listening live, we got nothing but love for you, baby. Please join the cast of our show. Your attractive finger punching into your device. 866-997-GRIT makes you part of the cast. And hello to everybody listening live on the app. I mean, listening on tape on the app and on demand and on the Fugelsang podcast. You guys are always allowed to call and join us, too. There's a lot going on today. It was a pretty crazy Monday. We have much to discuss, and I'm so glad you guys are with us. We're going to be talking tonight with Megan Peterson and Kat Rome on the new ally in the fight for LGBTQ equality in Minnesota, plus comedians Rhonda Hansom and John Poverono. And it's been a crazy one. The UN Security Council passed a resolution calling for an immediate ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. Instead of voting the resolution down, the U.S. abstained this time, allowing passage. That is a sign of how bad things have gotten between Biden and Netanyahu. It's also a sign of how far this White House has come. We're also going to be knowing that the Supreme Court's going to hear the oral arguments tomorrow in the case challenging the legality of abortion drug mifepristone, which has been FDA approved for literally decades. Ron DeSantis signed a new law banning kids in Florida under 14 years old from having social media accounts. And four Tajik men suspected of carrying out last week's deadly terror attack in Moscow appeared in court for the first time. Apparently, after being severely beaten and maybe tortured, the death toll in the horrific shooting at Crocus City Music Hall has now risen to 139. And this just in, federal agents mad because he's flagrant. They raided the L.A. and Miami homes belonging to Sean Puffy Combs. This is part of an investigation into sex and gun trafficking by the music mogul. I understand some of you young people might be confused because Diddy has a lot of names. He's known as Diddy. Before that, he was known as Brother Love. Before that, he was known as Diddy again. Before that, he was P. Diddy. Before that, he was Puff Daddy. Before that, he was Sean Combs. And before that, he was called the Quarrymen, I believe, when he played in Hamburg. So let's get to it. We got a lot to get to on the show tonight. Here's the big story you need to think about when you look for a takeaway from today's news. 3 weeks from today, former President Donald Trump will become the first American president to stay on trial on criminal charges. That's the story. It's not the story that dominated the news today, but that is the one you should take away. 3 weeks from now, for the first time in history, a former president will go on trial. And apparently, that former president has run out of ways to delay this. I've said it before, and I'll say it again, brothers and sisters, it's going to be a crazy year. We don't know what's going to happen. There'll be all kinds of hardships, all kinds of fear, all kinds of anxieties. We will be encouraged to hate each other, but just try as you're watching Donald Trump move forward, try to take a moment here and there and stop and smell the train wreck. Because most days of Trump news, there's good and there's bad. Now, it looks like he's not going to declare bankruptcy for a seventh time during a presidential election. So this is the big win he had today. Now, this is the guy who ran in 2016 promising to bring back torture. And now he's claiming his bond is cruel and unusual punishment and banned under the Eighth Amendment. It's so funny. Donald Trump, who never met a torture he didn't like, and now he's actually using the Eighth Amendment to try to avoid paying for his crimes. He's been struggling under the $454 million civil fraud judgment. Oh, but you know what? There's also the $83.3 million defamation trial loss to E. Jean Carroll. And as we mentioned on Friday, he got a bit of a bump when Filth Social got bought out. And as of tomorrow, you can start tracking Donald Trump's financial fortune. Just go to the stock market and follow Digital World Acquisition Corp. Okay, that's the Trump media brand that's going to start trading tomorrow as DJT. The Digital World Acquisition Corp stock jumped 30% on his reduced bond. So really great, guys. You're in a great position. I'm sure that'll be worth a lot in 3 weeks. But let's give Trump his good news. Today he got some very unexpected and, if I may say, morally inexplicable breaks in his fraud case. The appeals court lowered his $454 million bond to help him avoid asset seizures in his judgment from the New York civil fraud case. Again, he's already been guilty twice this year. They've cut it down from $454 million to $175 million with the deadline extended by 10 days. $175, he's got that in the cushions of his sofa, right? It's a major reduction. More special treatment than you would ever receive for any law you could break. They cut his bond by $300 million. I mean, the words special treatment were trending nationwide today on Twitter. He keeps framing himself as the biggest victim in the world, and he's been so put upon, and all these people are coming for him, and in reality, this guy's got more special treatment, more loopholes just for him than anyone I can think of. He's already had 30 days. He couldn't come up with the money. Now the time's up, right? Today's the day. Take his property. Stop this nonsense. Now, a bond, a surety bond, is a guarantee that any defendant has enough cash to pay the verdict if they lose their appeal and the original judgment stands. Now, Trump's attorneys had asked the judge to give him a $100 million bond, and Judge Anil Singh denied that request. Now, the pull panel weighed in on this, and the bond is almost double that $175 million. And I'm sure they're relieved. They don't have to post $500 million to continue his appeal. I'm sure they're relieved they got another extension, but the Republicans are outraged anyway. The Eighth Amendment of the Constitution refers to excessive fines. People were saying that he's been tortured. We violated the Eighth Amendment of excessive fines. Trump wasn't fined anything. He was found civilly liable in a court case. The amendment applies to criminal cases, not civil. Charlie Kirk, old balloon face himself, he tweeted, Bernie Madoff, $10 million bond for orchestrating the largest Ponzi scheme in history, defrauding 40,000 investors and billions of savings. Donald Trump, blah, blah, blah. Moron, Bernie Madoff got 150 years in prison. No one's trying to put Trump in jail. He's getting off so easily. Here's clip A6, a very pleased Donald Trump in the first part of his day, remarking on today's decision, shrinking the bond amount in his New York civil fraud trial.
Businesses are fleeing and crime is flourishing all over the state, and what he's done is such a disservice and should never be allowed to happen again. New York State is being battered by his decision. So I greatly respect the decision of the appellate division, and I'll post either $175 million in cash or bonds or security or whatever is necessary very quickly within the 10 days. And I thank the appellate division for acting quickly. But Judge Engoron is a disgrace to this country, and this should not be allowed to happen. Thank you very much.
Okay, now again, liberals were way too upset about this. Guys, relax a little bit. Remember what George Carlin said, okay? You get one free ticket to the freak show. Don't forget that and join the freak show. Because this whole thing revolved around his central argument, which is, I've lied about my wealth my entire public life. I mean, his most central myth about who he is that he has so much cash And this entire drawn-out delay process was him finding different ways to grovel and tantrum, because he doesn't. So now he only needs to post about $175 million bond or deposit to protect the assets. And he's been trying. He still owes penalties amounting to nearly $500 million, plus the interest, and the interest is still accruing while he appeals this. So he's got to pay a smaller amount for the bond right now. But again, he's still going to lose the appeal. That massive penalty, that's there, waiting for him, no matter how many delays he can pull off. Here, A7, Donald Trump told reporters he won't accept any foreign money for his defense, except maybe he will.
No, I don't do that. I think you'd be allowed to, possibly. I don't know. I mean, if you go borrow from a big bank, many of the banks are outside of this. As you know, the biggest banks, frankly, are outside of our country. So you could do that, but I don't need to borrow money. I have a lot of money. I built a great company.
Okay. He built a great company. Where have we heard that before? So here's the deal, folks. George Conway said today the state of New York is guaranteed the ability to collect at least $175 million without having to send lawyers around the country chasing Trump's assets down, which would be time-consuming, costly, difficult. Put more simply, the state of New York is better off having $175 million of the judgment secured than having none of it secured. And then they can still seize the properties to get the rest if they have to. You know, I thought I understood sexism. But then Hillary Clinton became the first lady, and I realized I had no idea what sexism was. I thought I understood racism. Then Barack Obama became the president, and I realized I had no idea how it functioned. And before Trump, I thought I understood the extent of wealth privilege. I mean, Khalif Browder allegedly stole a backpack, and he couldn't post $3,000 bond, so they locked him in Rikers Prison in solitary confinement for 800 days. And he killed himself. Donald Trump ripped off taxpayers for millions of dollars, and he gets to walk free. His bond reduced. Rick Scott was fined $1.7 billion for defrauding Medicaid, Medicare, and TRICARE. That's our military. Then he became the governor of Florida and wouldn't expand Medicaid and forced work requirements, and now he's a senator. Khalif Browder dies. Powerful men like Trump and Rick Scott just grift on and on and on. The media went crazy for this all morning. And I want to play one more clip. Here, the reporters are asking Trump if the smaller bond means that he will, for once, maybe invest some of his own money in his presidential campaign.
You mentioned the cash you have. You said on Friday it's something like $500 million. You intended to put some of that into the campaign. Now that the bond's been reduced, are you going to start putting money into your campaign?
Yeah.
You haven't done that since 2016.
Well, first of all, it's none of your business, I mean, frankly. But I might do that. I have the option. But if I have to spend $500 million on a bond, I wouldn't have that option. I'd have to start selling things. I don't have to sell anything because it's a phenomenal company. Look, I built a phenomenal company. Someday they'll actually report that. I built a phenomenal company that's very low leverage, unbelievably low leverage, with a lot of cash, a lot of everything else. Why should I let a crooked judge make a decision to give $450 million that allows me to spend very little money on my campaign if I so choose? I'll be spending money on my campaign. I might spend a lot of money on my campaign, but I should have that option. A crooked judge shouldn't say, we're going to have you post a bond and take all of that money that I could be spending on a campaign or other things if I want to do other things. So
okay,
we were gratified.
I can't even. You guys get the idea, right? That man's blown everything he inherited from his father and everything he inherited from Barack Obama. He's been successful at one thing, really, being a brand licensor, getting his name out there. I mean, even Celebrity Apprentice was going to be canceled, and then he made it all B-list celebrities groveling before him for another 15 minutes of fame. He's a brand licensor. He got fired from his own TV show for being racist. He was impeached twice as the president, and he lost the U.S. popular vote two times. And I don't need to overstate this too much, but the third's on the way. Tish James, she's already destroyed the NRA this year, and it's not even Easter yet. She can handle this. The real story, though, past all this bond business, that got all the hype, is what happened elsewhere in downtown Manhattan, where a totally different team of Donald Trump defense lawyers were arguing before Judge Juan Merchan that he should delay the Alvin Bragg criminal trial, the election fraud with the hush money payments for Stormy Daniels. And Trump was in this courtroom. His attorneys accused the prosecution of widespread misconduct, and the judge lost it and ruled against them. Judge Mershon said, "You are literally accusing the Manhattan DA's office and the people assigned to this case of prosecutorial misconduct, and you don't have a single cite to support that allegation." Then he said, "That you don't have a case right now is really disconcerting." So he set the trial date. The first criminal trial of Trump's life will begin in 3 weeks. That's the story, not the bond reduction. The New York hush money case will be the first of his four indictments. Trump faces 34 counts of falsifying business records to cover up, as y'all well know, a $130,000 hush money payment to adult film actress Stormy Daniels. We now know, friends, there was never an adult in the room, but there were adult film stars. And there's no more tricks up his lawyer's sleeves to delay this trial from happening. The judge has set it firm, April 15th, tax day. It's kind of beautiful. And because it's a state case, any guilty verdict will be beyond his pardon power should he become president again. Now, this comes from the allegation by Stormy Daniels, who says that she and Trump hooked up in 2006. Donald Trump, by the way, still denies it ever happened. That's very important to remember here. He denies there was any sex, but he's admitted he paid someone to say there was no sex, which didn't happen. Keep this in mind, because the media doesn't talk about this. This is legally the point of view he's pushing. He's still calling her a liar about the actual hookup. So Michael Cohen said that Trump had him funnel $130,000 to Stormy Daniels' lawyer so she'd shush up about the whole thing while he was running for president in 2016. Trump denies this, too. But again, none of these things have anything to do with the 34 criminal charges, not the affair, not the hush money. The charges are that he falsified business records to hide the hush money. That's what this case is. Michael Cohen had this deal with Stormy Daniels' lawyers. They paid the money through a home equity line of credit after Trump won. They repaid Cohen bit by bit for the $130,000 and lied, saying it was part of a retainer for his services. That's what got him in trouble, because it was really hush money, because the payment was related to his desire to win the election. So when you're spending money to influence the outcome of a campaign but not reporting that money to the Federal Election Commission, that's campaign finance fraud. Trump's pleading not guilty to all 34 charges. This begins April 15th. The prosecutors told the court they'll need 15 to 7 days at minimum to present their case. After that, they'll have the defense, then the defense will rest, closing arguments, and the judge has made it clear no more delays. So what this really means, my friends, this decision makes it more likely that we will have a guilty or not guilty verdict well before the 2024 election, and probably before the summer's over. And that's important. Up to 53% of swing state voters say they're not going to vote for this guy if he's convicted once in a criminal offense. And it's 55% if he gets a prison sentence. Politico Ipsos just had a poll that found by a more than 2-to-1 margin, people said a conviction would make them less likely to support Trump. More than a third of independents said it would reduce their likelihood to support Trump. And this thing's going to be wrapped up probably mid-July, probably right before the Republican convention happens, where Donald Trump will be formally made the GOP nominee. There is a very, very strong chance tonight, my brothers and sisters, that he will be a con, that he will be a convicted criminal when he accepts that nomination. And by the way, there's still going to be time for at least one of the other three trials to happen before Election Day. And again, he can't pardon himself on this one. So that was your day. One court tossed Trump a financial lifeline for fraud, and another told him it's time to pay the piper. Your hush money trial starts on tax day. And by the way, Donald Trump's Supreme Court hearing on presidential immunity, that's April 25th, 10 days after the trial starts. He's not allowed to attend both. It looks like Melania is not the only one who's going to need a body double. Now, there's so much we still have to talk about on today's show, including what's going on with the UN and Israel and Gaza, of course, what's going on with Russia, and what's going on with NBC and Ronna McDaniel. We'll get to all of it tonight, but I just want to share this before we hit the break. The Biden-Harris campaign put out a statement on Donald Trump's press conference we just played you a little bit of. It seems like the campaign has settled on bringing the fight to Trump and trying to provoke him. I quote, "Donald Trump is weak and desperate, both as a man and as a candidate for president. He spent the weekend golfing, the morning comparing himself to Jesus, and the afternoon lying about having money he definitely doesn't have. His campaign can't raise money. He is uninterested in campaigning outside his country club, and every time he opens his mouth, he pushes moderate and suburban voters away with his dangerous agenda. America deserves better than a feeble, confused, and tired Donald Trump. That's the kind of Democrats I want to vote for. Thank you very much. And by the way, he really did compare himself to Jesus just this morning. He did. And as you guys probably know, the only thing Donald Trump has in common with Jesus was that they both spent a lot of time with prostitutes and they both used ghostwriters. We want to know what you guys think. We are at 866-997-4748. 866-997-GRIT. We got a packed show tonight. I'm so glad you could be with us. And when we come back, we're going to be joined by Megan Peterson, Executive Director of Gender Justice and Gender Justice Action, and Kat Roan, Executive Director of Outfront Minnesota, the leading advocacy organization for Minnesota's LGBTQ population. Because Mackenzie Scott has just given $2 million to Gender Justice, Outfront Minnesota, and Youth Works North Dakota, part of her $640 million round of donations to nonprofits nationwide. Billionaire money, actually helping people. We'll be right back.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
So we've heard a lot in the news lately about Mackenzie Scott and the millions and millions and millions that this billionaire philanthropist and author has promised to give. She promised to give $1 million to 250 organizations last year through an open call for applications. And she just announced that she would give $640 million to 361 organizations instead. This is forcing me to rethink all my cynical thoughts on philanthropy. She has now given $2 million to Gender Justice, Outfront Minnesota, and Youth Works North Dakota, part of a $640 million round of donations to these nonprofits nationwide. I am so pleased to welcome to the show Megan Peterson, Executive Director of Gender Justice and Gender Justice Action, and a seasoned leader in the gender equity and reproductive freedoms movement, and Kat Roan, Executive Director of Outfront Minnesota, the leading advocacy organization for Minnesota's LGBTQ population. It is so nice to welcome you both on a Monday night with such an incredible, positive story. Welcome to SiriusXM.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you both. Megan, let me just begin with you. Can you tell us a bit about Gender Justice and the work you do? I know that it's designed to create a world where everyone can thrive regardless of their gender or expression or sexual orientation. But what kind of work does the organization do?
Yeah, well, you got our purpose right off the bat there. So thanks for that. But we seek to advance gender equity through the law. So the law is our tool. We work in the courts. We bring impact litigation cases, mostly in state court in both Minnesota and North Dakota. And we also work at the legislature to help pass better laws or amend current law. And we work in coalition with partners like Outfront Minnesota, with Kat and others to really help, you know, change the conversation about gender and issues related to gender barriers in our state and in our community. And as we think about it as really trying to kind of create the conditions in which our legislature and our courts can do the right thing on our issues.
And Kat, can you tell us a bit about Outfront Minnesota?
Yeah, Outfront Minnesota is our state's largest LGBTQ advocacy organization. We as an organization in various forms have been around since 1987, so have a 37-year history of advancing LGBTQ equity in the state. We do work on a policy level at the state capitol and partner with folks like Gender Justice and Megan's team in advancing great equity policies, but then also do a lot of work throughout community. So we do work in K-12 schools, supporting educators and GSEs. We do work throughout communities, just engaging folks in civic engagement and culture change work. And we run an anti-violence program that helps members of the LGBTQ community who have been victimized by violence and discrimination. So a whole host of things trying to touch all of Minnesota's LGBTQ communities across the state.
I can't tell you how happy this makes me to see the two of you doing the Lord's work. And suddenly rewarded in such a random and unexpected way in communities where the civil rights of LGBTQ Americans are under assault. I'm curious, how do you most effectively allocate these funds and support that you'll be receiving? I mean, what does this support mean in terms of the impact you can make? And how will this alter your focus for the coming year? Can I start with you, Megan?
Yeah, I'll just note, you mentioned that Ms. Scott gave $2 million, and it was actually to each of our organizations. So Gender Justice got $2 million, Outfront got $2 million, and then the organization in North Dakota you mentioned got $1 million. So all combined, $5 million across our three organizations, which is even better. But for us in Gender Justice, it is really just going to help sustain some growth that we've gone through recently over the last couple of years. You know, after the Supreme Court struck down Roe v. Wade and the Dobbs v. Jackson decision, we had to respond. We had been, you know, gearing up for that moment, removing Minnesota's restrictions on abortion and building a base of support to really help transform our laws related to abortion in our state. And so that, you know, fueled us to start to grow as an organization. Last year, we added 11 new positions, and we also expanded into North Dakota. So this funding really comes at a key moment that will help us sustain that growth and be able to expand our work, including building out, you know, even more of a presence in North Dakota.
Have you ever received a gift of this size before?
No. Our previous largest donation was $750,000, and that was after the Dobbs decision. So that was a huge game changer for us. And but, you know, happy to have that largest gift keep going up.
Kat, let me give you the same question. How does this $2 million for Outfront Minnesota impact what you're going to try to do with the organization and what your focus will be for the upcoming year?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this is a gift that is larger than my entire annual budget. So that kind of puts it into perspective in terms of the scale and scope of what this can do. And I think, you know, for us, it's really about, you know, recognizing and digging into the work that we do best and really expanding that all across Minnesota. We've done a lot of work, particularly outside of the Twin Cities metro area, to do outreach to local communities, start organizing folks in rural communities around the state, engaging them, finding ways to support work that's going on already. And this gives us the actual resources to invest in what we think are really good ideas for moving that forward. We know that, you know, rural communities don't have the level of support and connection and organizing power that we do here in the Twin Cities, but we also know that folks are eager to do that work and that there are these natural networks of folks everywhere. And so using these resources, we're going to be able to harness some more of those great ideas and the great work that's happening and hopefully change a lot of the cultural conversations around our state.
I've been very blessed to do a lot of shows in the Twin Cities area and have many interactions with the incredibly fantastic political comedy fans of the Minnesota LGBTQ community. And let me just ask you, how much has things changed for the better since you began doing this kind of work? How much progress have you seen? I think back to when I was a kid, the Defense of Marriage Act, and where we're at now, and it's really hard for me to still be a cynic and think that this kind of progress can at this point ever be slowed down. It seems like a big win for the decency of humans that some of us might have written off when we were younger.
Yeah, I mean, I think from my perspective, you know, LGBTQ communities and LGBTQ equity have come a long way since I was growing up in the 1990s in rural Minnesota, and thinking about the experiences that I had and the way in which LGBTQ communities are now talked about and present in public life, the idea that we'd have like openly trans legislators in our, you know, state legislature here would not have been imaginable to me back then. But I even think about just how much things have changed since, you know, even last year when we were looking at this wave of anti-LGBTQ legislation across the country, and Minnesota stepped up and passed a whole series of bills aimed at protecting reproductive rights, protecting gender-affirming care, protecting all sorts of things. And I think that shifted a national narrative in a really meaningful way at a time when people were feeling a lack of hope and a lack of momentum, feeling like maybe the progress of the last decade was somehow going to start, you know, turning backwards. And I think, right, you know, it's important to realize that that momentum is a really important part of all of this movement work.
Amen. Yeah.
I would just add, and you may already be aware, Minnesota was actually the first state to defeat a constitutional amendment trying to ban marriage equality back in 2012. So it is, and we also passed the first LGBTQ inclusive Minnesota or Human Rights Act in our state. And so we have been leaders. And I think sometimes some of the value of a state like Minnesota being a leader is both that we're surrounded by states that unfortunately are often going in the opposite direction, and indeed, being in, you know, flyover country of the middle of the Midwest, it's not where people expect, you know, progressive human rights focused progress to be coming from. So we're, you know, I think it's even more meaningful. Like, we're not California, we're not New York, where people go, oh, well, that's those blue states, you know. We're kind of right here in the middle of the heartland, and yet we are still demonstrating year after year that our neighbors and our communities and fellow Minnesotans value embracing, you know, diversity and inclusion, and really holding a strong bar on what it means to protect people's rights.
Well, that's why y'all make me feel so patriotic and proud to be an American, which is nice to say every now and then. Megan, let me ask you, though, your organization right now is celebrating a really historic and groundbreaking ruling that just happened from the Minnesota Court of Appeals regarding a pharmacist's refusal to fill a woman's prescription for emergency contraception based on his personal beliefs. And what is the story behind the decision and how that constituted illegal sex discrimination? This, to me, is one of the biggest stories of the year, and I hope that it becomes very, very famous in the months to come.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, it's long been a dream to be able to use sex discrimination as a way to get at healthcare refusals in general. And so when our client, Andrea Anderson, reached out to us, she actually called our legal helpline and told us a story about how she had the need of getting emergency contraception after the condom broke in her relationship with her long-term established partner. They had a foster kid and other children, and it was the middle of winter in rural Minnesota. And she brought her, she called her pharmacy in her small town, because the type of emergency contraception she needed still required a prescription. It wasn't available over the counter. And the pharmacist told her that he would not fill the prescription. And he referred to his, you know, personal beliefs as the reason why.
And can I just lean in and say, there's nothing in the Bible against birth control, nothing in the Bible against emergency contraception, nothing in the Bible technically against abortion. My apologies. Please continue.
Yes, no, exactly right. And actually, I mean, it's hilarious that people are opposed to emergency contraception on the grounds that they considered abortion, because it's absolutely not. It actually, if you are already pregnant, it can have the effect of like helping your pregnancy stay more likely, you know. So it is absolutely not an abortifacient. But our client ended up having to drive through a blizzard, actually, to the next town over an hour away with her baby in the back seat of her car to get a different pharmacy to fill her prescription, because emergency contraception is very time sensitive. You need to take it as soon as possible after unprotected sex. And so we just said, you know, this is not right. And we believed that it violated the Human Rights Act here in Minnesota. And we were very happy that the Court of Appeals agreed with us. And they're really setting a new standard. That, you know, says you can have religious freedoms and people have a right to the access the healthcare that they need, and your religious beliefs don't supersede someone's right to get the care that they need in a timely manner.
Amen. Is it true that this is the first United States ruling to ever find sex discrimination in the context of a pharmacy refusing to fill a prescription?
That's our understanding, and our colleagues at the National Women's Law Center, who, you know, have a well-honed national lens on that question, you know, have agreed that it's the first one that they know of as well.
Kat, let me shift gears and talk about your organization, because OutFront put out a statement not too long ago regarding a topic that's not covered in the media at all, to my reckoning. That's opt-outs. And last month, they reported that some schools are allowing for families to request opt-outs from certain books containing any LGBTQ characters or topics after there was threat of legal action from the Texas-based First Liberty Institute. Can I ask you, what is this about? Why are broad opt-outs not the best kind of educational practice to pursue, as some are claiming? And what harm can opt-outs inflict on children and students?
Yeah, for sure. So just broadly for context, opt-outs are where a parent or a family decides to opt their child out of a certain set of curriculum. And, you know, traditionally, these sort of opt-out rules have been established for dealing things like with, you know, folks who don't want to, you know, have their child educated about sex education. And so they opt out of a certain set of lessons or a certain book or a certain movie or something like that that might be objectionable to their beliefs. But what we saw for the first time this last year in Minnesota was folks coming to school districts and asking to opt out, not of one book or one set of lessons, but like any lesson or content or discussion around LGBTQ topics or anything dealing with sex or relationships or things like that. And, you know, I think the real, you know, bar for us is that, you know, one, it's just not practicable, especially in a school where you have hundreds of books, hundreds of lessons, lots of discussions around these topics, to ask teachers to go through and curate those for the individual preferences of every single student and family.
That's, I mean, really, reasonable. Like, what if I don't want my child to learn about slave owners? What are they going to teach in school then?
Exactly. Minnesota just passed a great ethnic studies curriculum requirement. Like, we could have folks opting out of all sorts of things, from geometry to ethnic studies to LGBTQ issues. And suddenly you're catering to all of these individual whims in a public school that's all about trying to create civic conversation and dialogue.
That's right.
And we think that's important, even with issues that people may disagree with or have different perspectives on. That's part of public schooling. If you want to be in a public school, you're going to be exposed to different ideas. But I think really here in Minnesota as well, because we have strong protections for LGBTQ rights, for non-discrimination protections, it's critical that students learn about different identities and about bullying and about these issues. Otherwise, they're going to find themselves in a position where you have students who haven't learned about these issues, bullying kids who share these identities or families who share these identities, and a school district that has its hands tied for actually dealing with substantive bullying issues. And
thank
so
you.
We believe it's really critical for school districts to balance out some reasonable concerns here and to really try and lean in and engage the fact that LGBTQ identities need to be taught and discussed and be part of curriculum. And where there are opt-outs, they have to be limited. They have to be narrowly tailored. They have to really suit the needs of the family in a way that is responsive, but doesn't infringe on the education or the environment of other students in that school.
Amen. I mean, every grade in elementary school, you're allowed to learn homophobia. You're allowed to be taught discrimination in kindergarten. I first learned discrimination against LGBT people in first grade, and yet we have to fight to teach children to respect LGBTQ people when the playground is really happy to teach them the other thing.
Yeah, well, and I'll just say too, I mean, our position is you can't opt out of knowing that people exist.
Yeah.
You know, there are kids in your school who have gay parents. You have, you know, depending on the age, you have kids who themselves identify, like, knowing that people exist in the world is not, you know, infringing on people's religious beliefs. Like,
exactly.
It's just not. It's just part of being in the world, and that's it.
Wait, I mean, Gender Justice right now is representing a trans woman, JC Cooper, who's fighting to enter the USA powerlifting competitions. I wanted to ask you about this, Megan, if that's okay. Can you give us some context, and what is it that makes this such an important civil rights case?
Yeah. So JC, I mean, at this point, you know, lawsuits can take a long time. So it's been many years now that we've been representing JC. She was denied being able to compete in the USA powerlifting competitions. I want to say back in like 2017, maybe. It was a while ago now. And it really was very transparently and blatantly, she was told, you can't compete because you're transgender. And, you know, it really was a little bit actually before this issue caught like wildfire in state legislatures, with specifically legislatures fixated on trans youth participating in sports in school. And so, you know, it was a little bit kind of before there was a big public discussion about it. But, you know, our position is that sport is about more than just competition. Sport is about more than just, you know, trying to get to the Olympics and to win the gold medal. Sport is really ultimately, when you boil it down, especially for people who compete, you know, just intramural or in your school sports, it's about being part of community. It's about physical activity. It's about learning teamwork. There are so many important skills and lessons and relationships that people develop by being a part of sport. And to categorically deny trans people the ability to participate in that is just unfair and discriminatory. It is excluding them from a huge part of our culture and our public life that there is not an alternative to, you know, like, yeah. Trans people are people who deserve to be fully engaged in our community, in our society. And there's no real reason for them not to be able to participate in sport based on their gender identity.
It's so inspiring to meet and speak with you both, especially after such great news about these donations. I do want to ask you, if I can, really quick, if you could just tell us, generous donations aside, what is it from where you guys stand in the Midwest that's giving you hope right now? What is it that's helping you feel like we are on the right track and that things are going to keep on getting better? Kat, let me start with you.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like literally every call that I get every day. I remember the same week that our governor, Governor Walz, signed the Trans Refuge Executive Order that was signed nearly a year ago today. I got a call from a family down in Iowa, and, you know, mother of a trans child was talking to me about their experiences and about what was happening in Minnesota. And they said, you know, tonight I'm going to sleep with hope for the first time in a long time. And, you know, to me, that signal that we can talk not just like quietly about these issues here, but proudly about how we're going to be inclusive of folks on a policy level, on a narrative level, in every community in the state, gives me hope that things can change, that there's movement forward, that like as people have experiences with LGBTQ community, just like we saw in marriage, that a decade from now, we can have the same conversations that we're having about marriage equality now, where it is just the accepted law of the land. While there might still be some folks that are opposed to it, the vast majority of folks are like, yeah, no big deal. And I believe we can get there on trans issues, on all sorts of gender equity and bodily autonomy issues. It's just going to take some time. And I see that shift happening every day in the conversations that I have. And that gives me hope, on top of, you know, the legislative wins, the court wins, all the great things that are happening here in Minnesota.
And Megan, in our final minute, what is giving you hope right now?
I would say talking to North Dakotans in particular. You know, I think for most of the country, people have in a way like written off North Dakota as, you know, too far gone. And every time that I'm there and I'm meeting with folks, they're like, we're here and we care about this and we don't believe our state is going in the right direction. And they are really excited to have our organization working in the state now and to be partnering with us and helping to build towards a more equitable North Dakota as well. So that every single time I'm there, I get really, really excited.
Megan Peterson is Executive Director of Gender Justice and Gender Justice Action. What's the best way for our listeners to follow you and your work?
At Gender Justice. You can find us on social media, or our website is genderjustice.us.
And Kat Roan is Executive Director of Outfront Minnesota, the leading advocacy organization for Minnesota's LGBTQ population. Kat, how can our listeners follow you and keep up with your work?
At OutfrontMN or outfront.org.
thank you guys so much for joining us tonight. I needed a story that's good for my heart, and this was certainly it. Congratulations on the donations. Please come back and see us anytime.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
A quick break. We'll be right back with your calls at 866-997-4748. 866-997-GRIT. This is Progress.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
We are at 866-997-4748. We have a lot to cover still. NBC News' horrible decision to hire fired RNC chair Ronna McDaniel has made a lot of people really angry. I don't fully understand why. And of course, I want to talk a bit about what's going on with the ceasefire agreement. Let's go to the phones first, though. Vinny is on the line in the state of New York on line two. Vinny, thank you for your patience on hold. You're on Sirius XM.
Oh, wow. I didn't think I'd actually make it.
So
now
glad you're here.
Follow Chris up.
Yeah, sorry. It's easy to do.
Well, at least it wasn't as bad as some of his other jokes. Sorry, Chris.
What's on your mind?
Yeah, I just wanted to point out how much people have to thank the Trumps for, as far as, I was talking about, were you better off 4 years ago? It's like, having raised three kids and thinking about when I was growing up. Like, one of the things that everybody seems to have in common is nobody can actually believe anything is real until it actually happens to them.
What do you mean? Give me an example.
It's like you tell kids, oh, you got to save. And it's like until they've actually had to scrape money.
Yeah.
They don't know things like that. And it's like you don't really realize that. And it's like we never realize anybody could be as horrible as anybody in the Trump regime.
That kind of privilege. Like, I mean, they're all the whole family. They're all like the kids in the Wonka factory tour. All of them. I mean, it just shows you what happens when you have unlimited capital and parents who can't say no.
Yeah, I mean, I listened to Tom Hartman as well. And it's like one thing he's always said is that a lot of rich people have the same disease that poor people have. They have hoarder syndrome, except they hoard money. And a lot of people don't. They think money's going to be the solution to their problems, but yet they don't believe that the rich could be that bad. And
that's very true.
Actually think so little about the people they've left behind, if they even knew them at all.
Well, in fairness, I mean, money does solve lots of immediate problems for those of us, who know how much a gallon of milk costs. But I totally get your point. I read someone who had this great saying that, can you imagine if they were studying chimps and there were certain chimps that hoarded all the bananas and had to have the most bananas, even though other chimps were starving? We would say those chimps were insane. But when humans do the same exact thing, we praise them for their financial brilliance.
Which, again, goes back to, because we're looking at other humans, so thinking we're trying to identify with them. So it's like can't really believe that they could be that horrible, because it kind of opens the window to say you could be that horrible yourself. But now I've got friends that I don't talk to anymore because, they've talked to me, before leading up to the 2016 election. I tried to talk to them about what was going on. And I actually worked at NBC for a long time. So it's like I got to see these people with their, with their hair down. So,
yeah, you get it.
I would try to tell people what the inside scoop was. It's like I've seen Sarah Palin. I saw I saw the change in John McCain, because in the 90s, he was a man of principle. But after like 2000, he just became he was like the Lindsey
Lindsey Graham.
Lindsey Graham of the 2000s.
Except the media all for the 2000s thought he was still the John McCain of the 90s.
Yeah, yeah. Or, well, they weren't going to let that go no matter what. And, like, you know, exactly. I mean, I've heard everything through NBC's, you know, through from the inside at NBC. So, you know, because we had MSNBC as well.
Yeah. So yeah. Well, like, let me ask you, my friend, as an NBC insider, how did you feel about NBC's announcement of having famous unrepentant liar and fraud perpetrator Ronna McDaniel, when Ellie Mistal doesn't even get a paycheck for doing MSNBC, and journalists and staffers are being laid off left and right, and now this career criminal is being paid $300,000 to go on NBC and push the Trump party line? I mean, I didn't really think there'd be this much of an outrage about it last Friday when it was announced. Are you surprised?
Well, I'm actually glad, because it's hard to tell, and I'm sure you get the same thing, trying to see it through the layperson's eyes. You know, it's like I look at the news through a skeptical eye, you know, kind of having known that NBC is just like that. I mean, they got Joe Scarborough. You know, they probably figured he needed company. You know, maybe they figured
they got Joe Scarborough. They got Nicole Wallace, David Jolly, Tim Miller, Charlie Sykes. There's a lot of Republicans working. There's more Republicans at MSNBC than there are liberals at Fox. I mean, they tried Megyn Kelly. Like, they've done it, and Megyn Kelly was just a racist. But she hadn't actually tried to overturn an election and betray the country. And I will say I wasn't really expecting the outcry to be this great. I'm kind of cynical about these things. And I thought, well, yeah, they want access to Trump and they want hate watching. So it kills two birds with one stone for corporate. My respect to the NBC On Net cameras who have spoken up about this publicly.
Yeah. And it's nice to see in this world of instant communication for everybody at every level that they can finally see through what they're doing. You know, it's no way. Yeah. I mean, Les Moonves opened the door talking about how Trump was great for NBC, for CBS.
Yeah, yeah. And he was. He told the truth.
Now people are seeing through this. Yeah.
And Trump has been great for MSNBC. Trump has provided MSNBC's programming now for 8 years straight. I got to run, man, because Rhonda Hansom's waiting in the wings. But please, don't be a stranger, Vinny. It's great to hear from you. Feel free to call up anytime. I'd love to get your take on the media from the inside. Right now, however, Ms. Hansom is a stand-up comic. She's a great writer, a director, an actor. I just saw her newest play on the Lower East Side 2 weeks ago. Holy crap, this lady has skills. She's opened as a comic for Anita Baker and Diana Ross and Aretha Franklin. She does great solo shows, People of Earth, Whether You Like It or Not. It's time for Tall, Dark, and Handsome Monday with Miss Rhonda Hansom.
I'm black, y'all.
Thank God for that. How are you, Miss Hansom?
I'm great. I'm getting a little rest after Dust of Egypt. And thank you again for coming out to that and all the support.
Of course.
I'm just so grateful for all the support that I got. But John, you got to help me with something. I'm trying to figure out what's going on in Arizona. I was just, my eyes just went across the screen and I saw something where it said that electoral workers, that poll workers are going to be trained for the worst case scenario, from active shooters to combat. What, I mean, what is going to be going on at our voting booths? I mean, are we going full tilt into third world country politics? What is happening in America, John?
I mean, what's happening is that Donald Trump supporters are threatening Arizona officials and voter registrars, and they're having to do active shooter drills with poll workers, including telling poll workers to have first aid kits with tourniquets to stop bleeding in case they're attacked by other Americans. That's what's happening right now in Arizona. And again, I love Arizonans. That state has become purple, but it has not become purple gently. Poll workers there are, you know, they're still dealing with getting hostility for having early drop-off ballots. But now they're making them be trained in first aid. It's just, it's insane. But this is where we're at now.
I am really just I'm gobsmacked. I mean, these people have it. They have it bad enough of having to spend the entire day doing a civic duty, and now their lives are in danger. And I think this is only the first state that's announcing it. I wouldn't be surprised if it becomes a voting trend that people have to be trained in self-defense just to watch our polls.
I know. You know, Rhonda, when I was a kid, active shooter drills, that was for schools, not for polling places.
Really?
Let's get back to traditional America, where only children trying to get an education are terrified by lunatics with guns, not poll workers. Can we please get some decency, people?
Citizens are sitting up in there trying to just do their civic duty before they go off this mortal coil, and now they're going to have to learn how to hide under tables and use their things for defense and poking out eyes with their I'm disappointed. I really am.
Well, you know, Rhonda, can I bring you back to life with some somewhat more encouraging news, which is that Ben Shapiro and Candace Owens hate each other. And I love this. I love that this racist hired this black woman who also hates black people to come and badmouth black people on his platform. And that's why they love Candace Owens. I've always said, if you're a black person who puts down black people, there's a white person who will put you on TV. And somehow, as she got more popular, things weren't working out well. And now there is war in MAGAland, and they have fired I guess she's America's most famous black woman who supports evil racists, Candace Owens.
She has really pushed Omarosa out of that top league.
Omarosa took herself out. Omarosa took herself out when she wrote a book and, you know, told the truth about Trump. I mean, Candace Owens is someone who's been trying to get rich off Trump for a long time. So is Ben Shapiro. Once upon a time, they both didn't like him. They both shifted to try to profit off of it. But I think it's great to actually see fissures between these fascists, because it's all a cult of selfishness. And sooner or later, they all turn against each other.
I'm looking at it like it's one of those sitcom love-hate relationships. So what was it like on Cheers or something like that? Well, they bicker, they fight, and the next thing you know, they're in a clinch in the back room.
Ben says hateful things about black people and women. Candace says hateful things about Jews. Together, sparks fly. I can see the pitch right now.
I think they both have hate speech on the brain. And it's remarkable that it appears that Candace is on some kind of tour. I heard one commentator say, I love it, a comedian I look at on Instagram. He said she was trying to electric slide back into the black community. That was really great. He does Paul Mooney impression. And he's really good at it. But everybody knows what she is. Everyone understands where she's coming from. I mean, she went did that full documentary demonizing George Floyd, and she has always been anti-black. So there's only so far she's going to go with this tour.
She wears Confederate flags, and she says white lives matter, and she's 100% against reparations. Always has been. So yeah. What a shock that she couldn't find more in common with those douchebags at Daily Wire. Let me go to the phones. Nicole in Texas before the break. You're on with Rhonda. Were you surprised by this Candace Owens stuff, Nicole?
Oh, yes. I'm going to put Candace Owens and Rhonda McDaniel on the I Have No Reputation to Reclaim tour.
Testify, dear. Please tell us.
Because if you didn't have character, morals, principles or upstandingness within you, then why should we even entertain any faux pas pretense of you trying to be someone who can now speak truth to power? As far as I'm concerned, exactly. Candace Owens, boo, don't come to the cookout because you got your ass kicked out the country club. Stay where you at. Or stay home.
You're right on point, but I do have to say they both have characters, just crappy character, very crappy character.
Exactly.
Yeah, like bargain basement. So take that to the thrift store and leave us who are trying to shop in the regular places on the clearance rack alone. Okay, we don't even want in the store, because at some point as a community we have to say people who have intentionally harmed us, who have potentially lied to us and used our pain and peddled it for profit, go to
thank
hell.
You.
You
thank
are
you.
Not welcome.
And can I just say, Ben,
you were supposed to be coming to the South because I was cooking and you was going on a boat tour. But I understand Live Nation took over.
We're coming to Atlanta. We're coming to Atlanta with Live Nation. You got no cause to yell at me. Live Nation's bringing us down to Atlanta. Albuquerque, that's sort of the South. Kansas City feels like the South.
I want you in NOLA so we can take you on these airboat tours. We're going to cook big pots of gumbo and jambalaya and bouillon.
I'm trying so hard. We're trying for NOLA.
Once we save democracy, you come through.
I gotta talk the rest of my band into going on a bigger tour. We're working on NOLA. We're working on Austin. We're working on Hawaii. And they could kill me for even saying those things out loud right now. We are trying. Thank you, Queen. I really appreciate your call.
I love you, Rhonda. I love you, John. And Thea, I love the Minority Report. We love it, love it, love it.
Isn't it great? Isn't it great? Rhonda, before the break, I think she's exactly right. I mean, little Ben Shapiro knew that Candace Owen had praised Adolf Hitler before he ever hired her. Like, so when she's criticizing Israel and getting the conservatives all upset, it's like, dude, you signed up for her brand of batshit because you thought it would own the libs. In reality, it just shows people you have no scruples, no morality whatsoever, and you're fine with discrimination and stereotypes until it's against a group you identify with.
Well, he knew what he was purchasing. He knew what he was getting. And I think Candace thought that she had a hall pass. I think she had. I think she figured, you know, she was going to, be an honorary, racist, and be accepted on all accounts. And it is well known that, you know, when you have run your usefulness, you will be discarded. And now she's in the dustbin. She's in the dustbin. I don't think that there's redemption for her, and I don't anticipate it. And I think people who try to pander to her are going to get backlash on that.
I think she will have a job at Newsmax before summer comes. I think that someone will snatch her right up, because there's value in the kind of filth that she does. There's value you have a black person who gets white racists to watch because they validate what white racists think. That's a really unholy alchemy, but the right wing's never going to give it up.
Oh, absolutely. But I don't think the grassroots are going to accept it. This chameleon act is not going to work on the grassroots. Somebody will definitely buy what she's selling, but not the grassroots.
Right. Okay, we got to hit our first break. When we come back, more of your calls, more with Rhonda. We're going to be joined, Rhonda, by our deviant little comedian pal, John Poveromo, one of the funniest guys in the game. John is doing an incredible telethon this week, which he did a few years ago, and I'm really proud to be a part of it. It's the 24-hour live stream to benefit the National MS Society. It's going to kick off this Wednesday, and when we come back, Mr. Poveromo is going to join us to tell us all about the insane list of comedic luminaries he has assembled for it. Miss Rhonda, will you please stick around for the rest of the hour?
Absolutely.
Let's make the party bigger. We'll be right back with John and your calls at 866-997-4748.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
And we are back at 866-997-4748. 866-997-GRIT. If you're just joining us again, the UN Security Council passed a resolution calling for an immediate ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. And instead of voting the resolution down this time, the U.S. abstained, allowing passage. This has generated a lot of headlines. This happened not a moment too soon. I dare say it happened a moment too late for up to 30,000 civilians who have been slaughtered in this conflict. It's such a pleasure to have Rhonda Hansen with us every Monday. However, allow me to bring into the party our good friend, Mr. John Poveromo, who you've seen on VH1, HLN, Fox News, and of course his excellent show, Dystopia Tonight. Not too long ago, I got to do Dystopia Tonight's annual 24-hour live stream to benefit the National MS Society, and now John is doing it again. And I always say this, I don't know how he books the guests he books. Rhonda, this man got John Cleese to do his podcast. It's crazy. John Poveromo, welcome back to SiriusXM.
Thanks so much for having me, man. I'm looking forward to doing the benefit with you again this year. You've done it every year, man. 3 years, I can't thank you enough for doing it.
Well, tell people what it is for those who don't know, because this is something you began during the pandemic just because, like, I guess, Rhonda, he's a good person. Like, a lot of comedians will pretend to, but John's actually a good person. He's willing to do work to help others. And it began as, you know, a pandemic show. It began as you having a show when we were all doing Zoom comedy. You've kept it going. Tell us a bit about how this piece has evolved.
Yeah, so it did. It began during the pandemic. I called it, I think, aptly named Dystopia Tonight. And I started interviewing a bunch of, you know, friends, my guests and stuff. You were nice enough to come on in the beginning. And then it just kind of exploded into this thing, and I decided to use that to put towards an organization for the National MS Society. My mom was diagnosed 15 years ago. I have close friends who have MS. You know, I had a friend who had actually passed away with it, because you don't actually die from it, but it can kind of, impair your living situation. We've just been going strong. I'm a big fan of the National MS Society. They do a lot of good work, and all of you guys have been nice enough to donate your time. I stay awake for 24 hours. You guys all pop in. Art Alexakis has opened it up with me for the last 3 years. He's the lead singer of Everclear.
Right?
Yeah. And he has MS. He was diagnosed and he found out, and he just started to going public with it. So he opens it up with me every year. And then, you know, you're on there. Robert Klein's doing it this year. Lewis Black did it 1 year. Had a little of That 70s Show reunion last year. Jeremy Clyde, who's from Chad and Jeremy, had a little Dick Van Dyke Show reunion with Bill Persky, one of the original writers.
I know Bill Persky.
People,
he's a legend.
Yeah, exactly. So then, and it's cool because, and you'll attest to this, especially during the pandemic, when you don't get to see people as often as we do, we're on the road, we're traveling, we're all headliners, so it's hard to work together. It's nice to actually be in a room like this, you know, with people you admire and you get to talk to, and it's for a good cause. So,
I do have to tell your audience that these two men, my two Johns right here, not only are they funny men, but they are two white guys with great hair. I mean, you really have to. You have to love them. They have such a generous spirit, but white guys with great hair, you just got to love them.
I know that. For a fact she wouldn't say that if she didn't mean it, John. That's as good as we're going to get from Rhonda. So you should feel really, that's better than a daytime Emmy to have Rhonda say that about your hair, I will tell you right now.
I'll take it. That's great.
You've got some really terrific talent joining you this year. In addition to me and Rhonda, you have up-and-comers like Judy Gold. It's everyone who's ever been on the show. Judy Gold, Lewis Black, Tom Papa, Rita Rudner, Chuck Nice. Yeah. I mean, but we should tell the folks, they're not really doing stand-up sets per se. There's no live audience. This is a 24-hour telethon where people are in Zoom chats with you and Zoom hangs. And you're all about the chemistry you bring together.
Right, exactly. Thank you for pointing that out. Yeah, so a lot of it is just mixing people up who have been together, who are fans of each other. And the audience in general really likes to get to see all these people interact for the first time. I mean, last year, we've got some great talent this year, but last year one of the big hits was an alt-rock 90s hour that we had with Toad the Wet Sprocket, the Gin Blossoms, Sister Hazel, and Stephen Page from Bare Naked Ladies. And people, like, you know, how often do you get to see those guys all together talking about music? The same thing, you know. With
I had a VH1 acid flashback from my years as a VJ over everything you just said.
Can I tell you how much I love that part? I don't know how fond of that part of your life you are, but I'm going to tell you right now, man, I'm always dying to get any little pieces of stories you have from that point in your life.
Okay, sure.
I know it's just one of those things.
Get a lot of celebrity ski events with a lot of one hit wonders from the 90s in Vail for VH1. And I probably still have all the stationery in a closet somewhere. So, yeah, a lot of really exciting cultural moments there, John. I can tell you, you missed a real renaissance in American art.
That's what I grew up with. So it's very much my nostalgia period. You know what I mean? I keep bringing these people together. I'm like, come on, don't you want to do a band? Don't you want to do like a Bob Dylan, George Harrison thing and get it? They're like, no, we don't want to do any of that. We're like, fuck. Come on, guys.
Well, listen, I'm glad you're doing it. If people want to watch, John, where do they go? Yes. How do they learn more?
You can watch online on Dystopia Tonight's Twitch channel. You can watch on Dystopia Tonight's YouTube channel. But more importantly, you can also watch and donate from the National MS Society's page at Dystopia All Night 24. So it's streamed live on the National MS website at Twitch and YouTube.
Nice. Okay, brilliant. We'll repeat that later on in the show, too.
So cool.
Yeah. Totally is. Can I just ask you guys about this Ronna McDaniel thing with NBC? Because this broke on Friday. Frank Conniff and I had a bit of a fight over it. Frank was outraged. I was like, what are you surprised about? There's journalists and there's the media. And, you know, this is media. They're doing this because they want to have someone who's pro-Trump on their channel to help them get access to Trump. They're doing it because they think Trump might become president again. They're doing this because they pay $300,000 to a liar because they know there's hate-watching value in all of this. Like, I was just very cynical about the whole thing. I wasn't surprised by any of it. But I will tell you, over the weekend, I was shocked at how people pushed back against this. To me, I think Ronna McDaniel is someone who lied and tried to overthrow our election, and she changed her name, literally denied her own heritage, and then Donald Trump rewarded her obedience by stabbing her in the back. I think this person is the ideal spokesperson for the Republican Party and Donald Trump, and I think that she's the most grotesque person you could have up there because no one's going to listen to her and think, oh, I want to vote for those guys. I was wrong. People flipped out, and I was not expecting to see Chuck Todd return to meet the press and call out his own bosses in defense of Kristen Welker. I'm actually a bit proud of how our liberal friends really stepped up on this over the weekend. Rhonda, has too much been made about this? I mean, they had Megyn Kelly, who was a racist, and they fired her for her racist comments. But this is someone who helped end the peaceful transfer of power in our country. It's really despicable.
I don't believe they're making too much of it. I'm glad to see some kind of backlash against this. It's long overdue, but it's a typical move by the network. The Trump supporter is obviously in the house and is answering the phone. I mean, it really is. A really great way for them to say, oh, look, look who we have on the payroll now. And guess who side we're on? Guess who we're supporting?
I mean, John, Chuck Todd returning to meet the press, which fired him over this. And he described this whole hiring as being about NBC buying access. And I'm like, well, OK, but buying access to who? Well, Donald Trump in his second term, Donald Trump, who promised to be a dictator, Donald Trump, who had cops beaten on the Capitol steps. They hired her to start making nice with this guy.
Yeah.
He didn't have enough access the first time around calling into Joe's show every day. I mean,
that's what confuses me. Like, he's not going to get back. He's not going to do MSNBC. Like they could hire Melania. They could hire his sons, Fredo and Shemp. Trump is not going to submit himself for hard questions.
Yeah, we need to have a little bit more confidence about our side kicking the asses of those people. Let them have whoever they want, who they think is going to gain them access to Trump. Their ideas are not going to hold up for that long on TV, I think, against our own people who seem to know more. You know what I loved? I loved seeing that Don Lemon, Elon Musk interview because that's a great.
Rhonda,
did
you see that, Rhonda?
Yeah.
You see that?
It's
Who
so
would
good.
Have thought an apartheid Nepo baby would glom on to racist white replacement theory? I'm totally shocked. Go ahead, John.
Yeah. No, I was going to say, but that's kind of a great example of an actual journalist going against somebody who is used to being in front of people who just nod along to whatever they say without going, where did you get that from? That's not true. I can fact check you right here. I know you're, you know, like that's a good example. I'm not saying that Musk is necessarily a full on Trump guy, but some of those ideologies do follow him into his interviews. And I think he got his ass kicked at that point. And I think that's what's going to happen when, you know, these other networks try to glom on to Trump supporters for ratings or for access.
I mean,
it's gonna be nice to see.
Rhonda, I'm thinking Rick Santorum being hired by CNN and then being beaten up nonstop for being horrible on CNN. To me, that's what this hire reminds me of, except, and it pains me to say this, this person is so much worse than Rick Santorum.
Yeah. Well, you know that real journalists have been an endangered species for over a decade now, John. Yeah. And so now we see that they're being replaced by bona fide scum. You know, that's what's happening now.
Mm. Yeah. Let me go to the phones. Don is on the line in Utah. Don, thank you for your patience. Welcome. You're on Sirius XM with Rhonda Handsome, John Poveromo, and me. What's up?
Oh, I can't believe I'm here with the beautiful Rhonda and Poveromo both. That's wonderful. Hey, guys.
I can't believe this is as close to Rhonda as you get, pal. This is as close to Rhonda as mooks like you and me can hope to get. Phone and Zoom.
So I got a family member that's works at 30 Rock. He's a producer.
Okay.
Bear with me. It's my ex-wife's boyfriend. We're all friends. Okay. We love each other. It's all good.
Can I give you my audition tape now?
Yeah. If you're this friendly with your ex-wife's boyfriend, I think you're the story here, but go ahead and talk about Trump, please.
Well, that's another story altogether. But when I heard that McDaniel was hired, I texted my ex and I said, what the fuck? And then I had to apologize later because I'm like, oh God, I don't want to get in the middle of, you know, her boyfriend's job at NBC.
So
but anyway, so there's some scuttlebutt that there's one of the executives at the top that may end up losing their job along with Miss McDaniel. So blew up like crazy. They were all like, what the fuck?
Wow.
So, you mean someone thinks it was a misstep?
Yeah.
Mistakes were made. Yeah.
Mistakes were made. Somebody's going to get fired.
I bet you're right. I bet your ex-wife's boyfriend's friend is the most reliable source. Normally, for a source like that, we got to go to the, you know, House Oversight Committee hearings. But this is your ex's boyfriend's coworker is probably an irrefutable source on this. And I think they're right. I think that at the end of the day, Ron has probably had enough lawyers go over this deal that if they fire her on day one, she'll still keep most of the money. And that is probably the reason why some executive is going to be shown the door, because she's already cost this channel a lot more than she's worth.
Well, just not that there's anything to do about gender, but it sounds like there's going to be two women that would be fired.
The other executive is okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
I get it.
Executive's female.
That's crazy.
I get it.
That kind of sucks. But anyway.
Although, as far as sources go ahead, the next caller, actually, his wife's hairdresser has some news on MSNBC. So, I mean, that might be, I don't know if they're going to refute it or not, but
my ex-wife's cousin's hairdresser has an inside scoop that we're going to get from their neighbor. So that's even bigger. Yeah.
I'm just saying, we got to keep topping people.
Don, in our strata of the media world, your sources are irrefutable, sir. I will take it to the bank.
Oh, I've got Starfucker stories to go all night long if you really wanted.
Listen. I wanted to call this show Starfucker Stories, but Progress leaned against that and asked me to keep it on political. So that's what we try to do.
Oh, that's great.
And by the way, Ben Kingsley gave me that idea. We were talking one time with Jack Nicholson, but I'll tell that story another time. Ben Kingsley and Jack Nicholson and I were all talking about how much we hated name droppers. And that's all I'm going to say now, but I'll tell the full story on my Patreon for an extra donation. Thank you so much.
But this caller, John, he's got to give a tutorial on how you keep all of the people in harmony when you have the exes, the new boyfriends, the new wives. I mean, I could really use a tutorial.
I mean, I consider his story to be much more interesting than anything about Ronna McDaniel. But Chuck Todd made a really good point. And it's so nice to say those words, because I don't say those words very often. Chuck Todd made a really good point that she wasn't hired as a technical advisor for their campaign or their convention coverage. You could maybe defend that. She was hired to be an on-air host. She was hired to be a broadcaster. The original plan was to have her on NBC News and MSNBC. She has no skills. She has no on-camera ability. I don't really know what insight she has beyond spreading lies. I mean, like, it's incredible seeing the backlash because Chuck Todd outed them. The network lied to Meet the Press. They were afraid that if Ronna showed up as a paid contributor, the Meet the Press would cancel the interview. So they never told Kristen Welker, who I have to defend now as well, that they had hired her. They just literally put her there. And I mean, it's really, really creepy. And it's the sort of thing that, like, if a mook like me knows this about the inner workings of NBC News, yeah, someone's going to be looking for a job by Friday.
But John, you're saying she's got no skills, no credentials, and she's a liar. She needs to be running for president.
I mean, at least she could easily get a job on Fox or Newsmax, most likely. Actually, she probably couldn't because Donald Trump had her fired. Right, John? I mean, she was loyal for years. And by loyal, I mean obedient. And she kept losing elections. They kept her. And then Trump finally fired her because he wanted to put his completely unqualified daughter-in-law in place to turn the entire outfit into a money laundering outfit, and so he can fleece it to pay his legal charges. I mean, like, literally, they are sucking the RNC dry. $50 million in legal fees they paid last year, and this is going to cause a revolt in the whole party. You know why these congressmen are quitting? Because they can't get any money anymore from the party. Because no one's giving to the RNC. They're giving to Save America PAC, and it's going to Trump lawyers. And any money that does go to the RNC is going to Trump lawyers. We're going to see more congressmen announce they're not going to run. Provaromo, what do you think?
I was going to say it's amazing because you touched on the firing thing. It's amazing that now these people, anybody that worked for Trump, any of their team has worked in an eventual firing from Trump into their campaign to get more publicity. Like it used to be you get fired. It was like, oh, holy shit, they really fucked up. And now you get fired and it's like, what kind of media deal can we get out of this? Can we get them like unqualified for everything, you know, and lambasted by Trump all over the place. And now they move to a news network and that's the or their own personal podcast or on X or wherever. You know what I mean? Like that's their goal now.
So, right, John. And the only thing that trumps that, no pun intended, is if they've done a stint in prison for doing Trump's bidding.
It is.
Well, that's Paul Manafort, right?
It is the equivalent of like a celebrity's getting canceled and then now turning it around to like, you know, a book deal, a fucking stand, a Netflix special, a stand-up tour, you know, like whatever it is. It's like, oh, OK, there's no real consequences for most things.
But what's the end game here? I mean, I still think if the election were held tomorrow, most likely if there's decent turnout, Joe Biden wins. If there's heavy turnout, Joe Biden wins by a lot. Mm-hmm. If there's low turnout, Republicans win. I mean, what's the end game here? Obviously, he's continuing on the grift. He's going to try to win to make his court cases, at least the federal ones, go away. And then presumably he's just running to get people to pay his E. Jean Carroll money. Yep. Right. Like that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no the last 2016 or whatever, I had genuine concern. You know what I mean? Like that's that everybody, you know, there were some people who were mixed who were like never going to happen. And I was like, it's inching closer at a pit in my stomach like every day. I'm not worried this time as much. Like, I mean, he's a nut job and he's a maniac, but I think Biden has done a lot. And I think the businesses and the corporations know, and I think everything's calmed down. I think, you know, they don't want the maniac back in the office. So, you know, they can.
I'm not worried because I'm a heterosexual white male. So I know I'll be okay. That's what I said on election night 2016. I mean, Rhonda, how worried do you think we should be about now that he's promised to be a dictator and we know exactly what he would do, which is make the rich richer and he can't wait to cut Medicare and Social Security and be racist? I mean, how worried should we be?
I can't even get that far in my worrying. I just see him. I envision him picking up the phone, calling and saying, I just need you to find me $175 million. You know?
So let's Let's talk about Diddy, because we don't do this enough. last year, his ex-girlfriend Cassie, who everyone knows, she said she endured over a decade of violent behavior and disturbed demands, and she filed a lawsuit over rape and abuse, and then he paid her off, and that went away. He was accused by a male music... paid her off the next day. There's stuff in my fridge that lasted longer than this scandal. Earlier this year, he was accused in February by a male music producer of sexual assault. And as of today, his home in L.A. and his home in Miami have been raided by the Department of Homeland Security in connection with a federal sex trafficking investigation and weapons charges. No one knows where P. Diddy, whatever his name is this week, might be. But I've never thought I'd say this, guys. I think it's time for him to change his name again. I think he has to do it this time. I support it this time.
John, has anybody FaceTime with Russell Simmons and seen Diddy in the background there?
Russell Brandyman?
No, Russell Simmons.
No, Russell Simmons.
Yeah, Russell Simmons was in a similar situation himself.
No, nothing like this. Russell Simmons got Me Too'd. He was accused, but he didn't have the Fed showing up at his house for sex trafficking.
Okay. Yeah, I got what you're saying.
But I think that Diddy, might, be sleeping in the guest house at Russell's place.
That's Brett Ratner. Brett Ratner sleeping in Russell's guest house, but that's another story altogether.
Absolutely.
He has had some really high-powered, very rich, prominent people supporting him along through a series of mishaps. Not legal things going on, sometimes deaths, sometimes shootings, occasionally a person hung over a balcony. And we haven't even gotten into the freak-offs, the sexual shenanigans that go across the board. He's an equal opportunities, sexual abuser, assaulter, and consumer, and now we are dealing with the possibility, and this is all alleged.
Allegedly, you're right. Thank you, legal department. Thanks you.
Of sex trafficking, and I mean it's just wild. And I don't know if they have been arrested, but I saw a very scary picture. I think it was his two sons, that they were home when this happened, and that they might have been taken into custody. I'm not saying arrested, but it really is a terrible cascade of circumstances.
Well, I want to say our otherwise indifferent executive producer, Chris Hauselt, he told me before that his private jet has left the U.S., and his homes were raided by DHS, but the flight path of the plane appears to be headed towards Cape Verde, which has... no extradition treaty within the U.S. So my question is, how much will this hurt his attempts to get back with Jennifer Lopez? Because I don't see how it's possible after this. I mean, when she married Ben Affleck, I thought she had a shot. But now I don't see it happening, John.
No. Are we talking like Epstein level like stuff? Like, do we think that's how? Wow. I'm blown away. I mean, again,
very interesting word.
Not that I've ever been like a huge fan, so I don't know. But I've. This whole thing blew me the fuck away.
Cat Williams told us this was coming, by the way. I just want to point that out in that crazy interview. Cat Williams said this was coming this year, and he said Diddy's name. So I'm going to go to Cat for all my lotto numbers at this point.
Well, the mystics are saying this is the year of revelation, and a lot of things will be revealed, and the shields will come off. And it looks like some of that is in process.
Oh, I love it. Listen, we have time for one quick call. Stephen in Kentucky, can we do a quick one? Can I give you 1 minute before the break? And
yeah,
I'll turn it over to you, Brilliance.
I just want to mention, I had gotten a call from Robert Kennedy's campaign recently.
You and 20 million other guys. Did he ask you to be VP as well? Because he asked me and Chris and Theo. We all turned him down.
Oh, is that right? Well, you all have the son of a bitch come on your show. I have a few things to say to him.
He's done this show before.
That monkey that he has working in the head of his campaign, she was incredibly arrogant. And let me tell you something. I told her, you know, he is a spoiler. That's what he is. All this talk about trying to get his Uncle Jack's old campaign commercials, reviving that. I said, it's a poor excuse. And she actually threatened to hang up on me. I said, oh, no, dear, I have the last word. And I hung up on the bitch. I did. I cannot believe that they sit there and they talk to people like this, just like all these other people. It used to be, at least, if you were going to con somebody, they at least had some charm about it. Nowadays, they don't seem to, it's just like they're just Neanderthals. And they just
they're not trying to win, Stephen. They're trying to beat Biden in seven swing states. They're trying to go for the dude bro vote. They believe that this will take votes away from Biden and not Trump because of his last name, no matter how hard his family campaigns against him. And the entire thing, you're exactly right. It's designed to be a spoiler. They don't want to win. They don't want to win. And tomorrow he's going to announce his running mate. So I can't wait. TNT says it's going to be Nicole Shanahan.
Well, maybe he'll pick P. Diddy to be his running mate, for all we know. I mean, since Trump and Kennedy seem to have a penchant for the criminal element, I mean, for heaven's sake, maybe, oh, yeah, let's go ahead and pardon him like we'll pardon the January 6th terrorist. Oh,
it's going to be the ex-wife of Google co-founder Sergey Brin. Sergey Brin's ex-wife, she partially funded that crazy Super Bowl ad. Stephen, thank you so very much for the call. So we're in the sweeps, the veep stakes, to find out who's going to help RFK achieve nothing tomorrow. In the meantime, John Poveroma, how do our listeners follow you and keep up with all your doings?
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to tell them to go to the donation page. It's bit.ly/dystopiaallnight24. That's
right
where
on,
you
man.
Can find the live link to watch the stream and to donate to the charity.
I'll see you on your event this week. Rhonda, how do we follow you?
The old folks can go to Facebook, Rhonda Handsome Comedy. I am on Instagram at Rhonda Full. That's with two L's. And on Twitter, I refuse to call it X, at Rhonda Handsome, like a handsome man without the D.
John, I tell her every week, you don't need the D, Rhonda. You don't need the D. You just don't. I mean, we know this. Okay, guys, thank you. I love you both.
We gotta go. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Thea. I'm John Fugelsang. Keep it tuned to SiriusXM Progress. Peace.